Thank you. Please be seated.
Justice Owen had a personal problem to attend to, but she's around to participate in deliberations and decisions in this case. The court is ready to hear argument from Petitioner and Cantilever Development versus El Paso County.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Skipworth will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honors, this case is a prime example of why the court should rule that El Paso County has waived its immunity from suit because of its conduct in this case. The case is distinguishable from federal sign, and the open question that I maintain is still open as a result of the federal sign decision. It's also distinguishable from Travis County versus Pezel and the TNRCC versus the Hit Baby case that were recently decided by this court. And also one unique thing in this case that I have not seen in the record or referred to in the other cases is that the political backdrop of this case is unique because of what went on to prevent the transfer of this land to my client. The federal sign case is distinguishable because this case is a suit against a county. The legislature in its recent enactments has not included a county within the definition of a unit of government under Chapter 2260 or the administrative procedures for breach of contract cases. The legislature in defining state agencies for the purposes of the Civil Practices and Remedies Code, Section 107 and 109, in the definitions in 2151.002 excluded, not specifically expressly excluded, but did not include counties in the definition of state agency. The claim is also distinguishable from federal sign because the claim is for specific performances or damages, which brings it within the discussion in federal sign of a mutuality of obligation and mutuality of remedy. Also distinguishable from federal sign because the claim is for the purchase of land and not for the sale of goods and services. In this instance, my client would have been paying to the county a substantial sum of money for the land that he wanted to purchase and for which he won the bid. Lastly, this case is all distinguishable from federal sign because my client was willing, able, and ready to close the sale, and he had performed all he could do. He fully performed under the contract and had deposited with the title company enough money to pay for the land, for his bid, and for the closing costs. The case is also distinguishable from the Travis County and Pezel case and the Hit Baby case because in each of those cases, both parties to the contract had fully performed on the original contract itself. In the Pezel case, there was a dispute over the 21-day delay and what had caused that delay. But that was within the confines of the contract. Likewise, in the Hit Baby case, there was a dispute concerning the amount of money that was due to Hit Baby for a change in the conditions. But the TNRCC had offered a great sum of money to try to resolve that. In both of those cases, governmental entities were not trying to avoid their responsibilities under the contract that they had with the private party. And I think that's what distinguishes this case from those cases.
Well, I mean, that's just a matter of semantics, though, isn't it? I mean, the parties in those cases would have said they were trying to get out of their obligations under the contract.
Well, I understand. But what I'm saying is that in those cases, both entities, governmental entities, had paid pretty good sums of money under each of their respective contracts, and in the Baby case, at least was offering to pay even more. But what I'm saying is, but there was a contractual dispute that arose out of the contract itself.
Well, those were service contracts, which are a little bit different than what we have here. I mean, it strikes me that this is just a straight breach of contract case. I mean, it doesn't so somebody's ready to perform under a contract, somebody doesn't want to perform the contract anymore. Really, whether someone's performed or not doesn't seem to fit the scenario.
Well, you are correct. It is a straight breach of contract case, a little bit different because it's involved with a governmental entity that, of course, is immune from suit unless, in this instance, the county has waived its immunity from suit by its conduct. And that's why this case...
What conduct do you say waives the immunity in this case?
The conduct has to do with the backdrop of the case, and that involves the county commissioners in their multiple meetings in December of 1994, where there were political maneuvering and shenanigans that were going on at this time. There was an outgoing county judge.
Now, I understand the factual backdrop, but it seems to me that the actions that you're relying on for waiver are the very actions that form the basis of the contract. I mean, the contract formation question.
I would disagree with that. I think the contract has been formed. The contract was formed when the county commissioners accepted my client's bid.
What about this vote to allow the county judge to sign?
Yeah, that's...
Are you alleging that was an unnecessary step, an illegal requirement imposed later, or was it a step that had to be done, that there was no discretion about, they had to do it, or was it actually a real vote? And if it's a real vote, then how can the contract be complete?
I wouldn't characterize it as illegal. I would characterize it as unnecessary. The county judge had a ministerial act to sign the deed, and in the first appeal of this case, the Court of Appeals in El Paso, that was one of the discussions in that case. In fact, that was a very important discussion. Under Section 263.07 of the Local Government Code, it adopts procedures that the county is to follow in order to sell land or a governmental entity.
Which
section is that? 263.07 of the Local Government Code. And in the first appeal, the Court of Appeals, which incidentally this court denied review on, in that case, the court discusses that 263.07 of the Local Government Code allows the county to adopt more stringent, more expansive, more broad types of rules and regulations and procedures for the sale of land. But in this instance, the county had failed to do that. There is no evidence of any type of procedure adopted by the county of El Paso to sell real estate.
Why wasn't this an illegal vote?
Well, I guess you could call it illegal. My thought of illegal is that it violates the statute. I don't know that the idea would necessarily be in violation. That statute doesn't say they can't do it. I'm just saying this procedure comes out of nowhere.
But you're saying voting yes or no to one has no effect on the county judge's responsibility or the status of the party.
Well, if the county commission had voted no, of course, I think we'd be in the same boat we are right now. But my position is that under the law, and in that first appeal, the Court of Appeals held Section 272.01 of the Local Government Code was a default provision. Have looser requirements for the transfer of land. But
the question is there a law that requires the commissioners to vote to authorize the county judge to sign the deed?
No, there is none. And there was no procedure adopted by El Paso County that required the commission to authorize the county judge to transfer the land.
So the statute had been fully complied with for the purpose of the transferring title of the land?
It had. And I believe that was the conclusion of the El Paso Court in first appeal. But not to be forgotten is that the new incoming county judge, and this is all on the record, I don't know that any other case has been this fully developed, but the incoming county judge got two of his allies in the Commissioner's Court to file a suit for an injunction and a TRO to stop the county commission from voting to transfer or authorize this transfer of the land.
But you have not argued that as a basis for waiver, have you?
I believe that's in my brief. It is covered. It is these actions that took place that prevented these votes to transfer, authorize the transfer of the land. The TRO was granted on December 20th, which canceled a meeting scheduled for December 23rd. Temporary injunction hearing takes place and is taking place on December 28th on another meeting to be held. And what's important here is that on December 30th, the district judge ordered a temporary injunction from the bench. That was reduced to writing shortly after the new year, and then the new county judge and his allies on the commission dismissed or non-suited their case. So that injunction was a nullity. And the new court obviously didn't transfer the land, and that's why we're here. And it's because of these actions that I think that caused this case to be much different than any other this court has looked at, and would justify this court in ruling that El Paso County waived its immunity from suit because of its conduct.
You've argued throughout that the earnest money was deposited by the county and kept by the county, but now you concede that they didn't keep that earnest money?
Well, they kept it, yeah. They kept it for 5-6 years until I pointed out to the court, the trial court, that the county still had the money. And of course, the reason I did that is to try to establish the waiver by conduct with the trial judge. And the trial judge initially thought, well, that was a pretty good point. After that hearing on the motion for summary judgment we're here on today, the county did return the money with interest. Frankly,
the lawsuit had already started.
First appeal had been completed. This case has been going on.
So if there was a waiver from sovereign immunity, the waiver would have to occur before the court could acquire jurisdiction. If the court acquires jurisdiction, then it couldn't lose it by paying back $5,000.
I would agree with that.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kevin. The court is ready to hear argument from this problem.
May it please the court, Mr. Steve Hughes will present argument for the respondent.
May please the court, Steve Hughes for the respondent of the County of El Paso. We believe the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed for four reasons. The first is that cashing the earnest money was simply part of the contract formation. The second is that acceptance of benefits under a contract is not waiver by conduct. The third is that the ruling in this case, or the result in this case, is consistent with Travis County versus Pelzel. And the fourth is the bid statute that applies in this case did not require the county to complete the sale. This court, earnest money is a little different because it is money paid up front to essentially seal the deal and bind the seller to the contract for sale. So we believe because it was an earnest money that was cashed, this $5,000 check, is that that was simply part of the contract formation, that is, formation of the contract for sale and binding the parties to the contract for sale. So if that is true, then this case falls under the federal sign rule that mere contracting is not waiver by conduct. But in this case, we have, what this court said in Little Tex also was that acceptance of benefits under the contract would not be considered waiver by conduct also.
Well, but you can't just confiscate somebody's money and then walk the deal altogether. And we've had cases where somebody, there's an argument about how much was done, did they do it right, and so on. But I don't recall a case where the government unit just took the money and refused it, and nothing happened.
Right, and that's a good point, Your Honor, is that this court has pointed out in its prior cases that one reason to leave legislative control of sovereign immunity or leave that to the legislature is it allows the governmental unit to reconsider prior policy that may be ill-advised obligations. And I think that is essentially what happened in this case.
All right, but they still can't keep the money.
Correct, and that is the main reason that the money was repaid with interest, albeit years later. The result in this case is very consistent with Travis County versus Pelzel.
Before you go on, let's say they had kept the money until this day and until today, and and forevermore, and they refuse, you just take the position, we're never giving it back, and you can't sue us for it. Do you think that would be waiver by conduct?
I don't believe so, and that's because if we look at the Pelzel case, essentially what happened there is Travis County got the building, occupied the building, and yet didn't pay $5,500 of the agreed purchase price. So essentially what this court said in Pelzel is you do not have a cause of action for that $5,500 plus the $130,000 in alleged hindrance damages. So in essence, Travis County, it could have been proved that they were wrong. In essence, there was no relief for Travis County keeping $5,500 of this.
Why shouldn't we reconsider this whole doctrine then? If you're saying that a state or a county can simply keep money, earnest money, no matter what the amount, or services, and walk away, why shouldn't we reconsider this whole doctrine? That seems fundamentally unfair, maybe unconstitutional.
I think what we have to look at is this, that by allowing governmental control over this, allowing the government to decide when the suit can be brought, it's allowing new officers that come in to reconsider these obligations.
Why would the new officer reconsider if financially it makes much greater sense, you know, to keep millions of dollars that you sort of stole from the contracting party?
It would be essentially protection of the taxpayers. In the present case, what showed up in the first appeal was that there was a subsequent, the value of the property was originally determined by an old GLO, General Land Office, appraisal. In the first case, there was evidence that there was a subsequent appraisal showing that the property was actually increased in value or was worth 11% more than the $2.5 million that was bid. So, in essence, what was happening here was the protection of the taxpayer because this was taxpayer property. And so that was a good reason, I think, a good reason to have the legislature or the governmental body deal with these issues. And the other limiting factor that we come up with is these are politicians that have to be reelected, and I think that could be a real limiting factor on what these politicians do. Yes.
I have a question. Did Catalina ever make a formal demand for the county to return their $5,000?
I believe how it developed was the demand did not come until the 5 years down the line into the litigation when it was pointed out to the court that the county still had cashed a check and still held the funds. And at that time, when the money was returned.
What's the status of the property now?
The property is still held by the county. It's not been developed. In actuality, there have been some highway improvements beside it, so it's probably substantially increased in value at this point, such that the county, it has become more valuable possibly to the county to keep it for themselves.
Right, I just wanted to make sure that
the performance is
still possible.
It is, yes. Let me talk about the bidding statute. In the first appeal of this case, what the El Paso Court of Appeals determined was that the bidding statute, section 272.001, applied to this case because 263, which was mentioned earlier, the county had not adopted any specific procedure on bidding out for the sale of land. 272.001 is rather unusual because, like some bidding statute, it says you don't have to accept any bids to come in. But it goes further and says this statute does not require a county to complete the sale. And I think that makes a big difference in this case. In what may be troubling the court as opposed to Travis County versus Pelzel. In Pelzel, there was a liquidated damages clause. So at least there was a colorable argument that Travis County had some colorable right to withhold this $5,500 in delay damages. Well, in this case, because 272.001, the bidding statute applied and said that the county did not need to complete the sale, there was a colorable right for El Paso County to refuse to complete the sale. So I think that brings this case within Travis County versus Pelzel because both Travis County and El Paso County had some right upon which they could do what they did. This court has said in prior cases that...
I'm sorry.
Yes.
The question here is there jurisdiction to try this case. So I don't ultimately know what the trial court might conclude statutorily about a county's obligation to complete a sale or a ministerial or that sort of thing. But can the court decide that issue without Catalina Development going to the legislature and asking their permission to litigate this issue against El Paso County? And on that question, the county takes the earnest money, holds the earnest money, doesn't return the earnest money, can't that constitute waiver of sovereign immunity for the point of litigating whether they should be obligated to complete the sale?
Well, there's not been a request for declaratory judgment in this case. It's a pure breach of contract, asking for specific performance and attorney's fees or an alternative damages. So because of the shape of the case as a mere breach of contract case, I don't believe that would be the case. This court has noted that legislative control, I think, essentially allows, it's a protection of the public purse type of argument, allowing legislative control in these cases. And I think this reflects on this bidding statute that says you don't have to complete the sale. I think what the legislature was doing with that bidding statute was saying, we're imposing these obligations when you're going to bid out land for sale, but we're not saying that you have to complete the sale. That is, we're giving you this flexibility, even though we're imposing procedural obligations in the bidding. I think what the legislature has done in enacting the statute, it has done the balancing. It has said, we're going to give you the flexibility not to complete the sale, and thereby protect the public purse. And we're looking at there may be possible downsides, but we have come down on the side that we're going to say you don't have to complete the sale, and we're going to give you this flexibility.
By completing the sale, the only thing left here was to sign the deed. Is that true?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Was the only thing left here to complete the sale to sign the deed?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it's just sign the deed, cash the check, that was all that's left.
Exactly.
Under what authority did the commissioner's court have the right to make the decision not to sign the deed at that stage?
The record doesn't show that. I haven't found a statute that requires that the county judge has to be specifically authorized by vote of the commissioners to do that, although it was customary in El Paso County to do that.
Well, if the commissioners voted to do it, and then the county judge decided not to sign the proper paper and had a big ceremony and just decided not to sign it, would that be an authorized non-completion of the sale?
It could be, Your Honor. It could be.
Your argument would be a breach is a breach, regardless of how the breach occurred.
Exactly, Your Honor. That this is a breach of contract case, there was a breach, and under this court's prior decisions, this fits well within those decisions. And in this court, in the numerous post-federal sign cases, the state cases that this court has done, this court has continually deferred to the statutory administrative process that was set up. I would suggest that this court should defer to the legislative decision in this bidding statute that there was no statutory requirement to complete this sale, and that therefore there was no waiver by contract. Thank you.
Mr. Skipworth, let me ask you this. Mr. Hughes has made the argument in his brief that there's a fundamental difference between when the government acts as a buyer as opposed to when the government acts as a seller. In this situation, which is unique among our sovereign immunity cases, where the sovereign entity is the seller of sovereign land, that this is the particular area where immunity should apply. In other words, if you have officials who agree to sell a piece of property, perhaps for less than it may be worth, isn't the whole purpose of immunity to allow administrations to shed off contracts that do not benefit the public? And I'm going to add another question to this. Is there any testimony about any sort of detrimental reliance, that this land, this plaintiff was injured in any way or out of pocket anything other than earnest money.
There probably is. What's unusual in this record is that there is a stipulated set of facts, several pages, many pages, where all the various facts are laid out, all the meetings of commissioners.
But I mean, the plaintiff didn't go start operations on the land, or we don't have any evidence that they actually, they performed anything.
They.
The plaintiff. Under the contract. They just stood ready with the check, but they didn't do anything to their detriment. I mean, it strikes me that this is a situation that the policy behind sovereign immunity is supposed to serve, and that is not saddling new administrations with old contracts that may no longer be good contracts for the public.
Well, I'll tell you a better example. This is the case in California, where the governor signed contracts to supply electricity greatly over market prices today, and a new administration could, and perhaps the present administration could, should reject those contracts because of all the things that come out about what happened in California and caused the prices to go up. That would be an example of how a governmental entity, or why a governmental entity and a new administration should reject an old contract. But in this case, this land was not sold for less than fair market value. It's very clear from the first appeal.
But that's not a fact-driven question, I wouldn't think, on a case-by-case basis as to whether the governmental entity's decision has merit or what the policy was behind it. Just the premise that new administrations should be able to shed old contracts that are no longer good for the public. I mean, why does this not fit that policy?
Well, I guess there has to be a determination of what's good for the public and not good for the public. I mean, the county commission decided that they wanted to sell this land, that they had received in the trade from the GLO. They had an appraisal from the GLO as to what this property should be worth, and they sold it for that price, but they didn't complete the sale. That was the old administration. New administration comes in, and the particular county judge had ulterior motives as to why he wanted that land. Well, for the public good, it's for his good.
Well, okay, but let's presume it was for the public good. Let's presume that the newly elected official thought that it was being undersold, that it wasn't as much as could be gotten. I mean, isn't that the perfect situation for sovereign immunity to apply?
Well, I would have to adopt Justice Enoch's philosophy on that. A contract is a contract. And I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel about it. I don't think that this governmental entity, because of what went on before the end of the 1994, should be allowed to get out of the contract. I think they have waived their immunity to sue.
What do you say in response to the bidding statute that requires the county to get through the sale?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
The argument's been made that the bidding statute did not require the county to complete the sale.
I disagree with that. That particular provision in the statute, 272, is advisory. It goes through this different list of different things, including they don't have to accept, they can reject any and all bids. They don't have to complete the sale, but that doesn't necessarily get them off the hook. It doesn't say, county, you can breach your contract and you don't have to sell anything you don't want to. I don't believe that's what the purpose of that is. The purpose of it, I believe, would be that if a procedure that had been adopted pursuant to one of those two bidding statutes had not been followed, then I think that the entity would be within its rights not to complete the sale. Not to just accept the breach of contract.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
That completes the arguments for today. The marshal will now turn.
All rise. Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands.